Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Our guest today, Par. Par, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate you being here. And can you tell us, first of all, where you're calling in from and what you do for a living with Movin' EV?
I'm calling in from New York City. Just got here actually a couple of days ago. Just moved here.
Oh, awesome.
And Movin' EV is our electric bike brand. Also, we do e-scooters as well. We're based in Toronto, actually, and we started there about 3 years ago. And, you know, super blessed and grateful to be able to expand here to a new country, a new city. And yeah, we're about to open our new shop here in East Village.
Awesome, man. That's amazing. And yeah, welcome to New York, first of all. I'm a lifelong New York native, so welcome. And yeah, so I guess just tell me a little bit more about your background, though, and what got you interested in you getting into the electrical bike space. What did you kind of notice out there in the market that you were looking to do a little bit differently or better with this brand specifically?
Yeah, you know, my journey is a little bit all over the place. I did my undergrad in Toronto in the medical sciences, pharmacology. And I went to a master's program, did that for about a year. Didn't really like it, although that was the kind of path I was heading down in being in the medical space. So I dropped out, and that whole summer of 2020 when COVID hit, a lot of people kind of changed trajectories. I was one of them. I was biking a lot at the time, being outdoors a lot, because I really didn't like staying inside. It was kind of driving me nuts. And while I was doing all that, I was kind of looking into the bike industry, and then I kind of stumbled upon the e-bike industry. I had no clue about e-bikes, you know, up until literally about 4 years ago when COVID hit. And that's what kind of started the journey. You know, I saw that the industry was massively growing during that time because everyone was just trying to get out there, and especially older adults, and a lot of brands were just blowing up. So I figured, like, hey, I've always wanted to try business. I like cycling. I've always biked my whole life. Never tried e-bikes though. And I approached one of my buddies from university. We kind of got together. We talked about it. We saw how much resources we had. Like, we had some money to buy like 30 bikes, I think, something like that. And that's what kind of got it started. And as for like differentiator, I would say in the e-bike industry, unless you design something from scratch, which could take several years, like 3-4 years from the time of like design, it's difficult to differentiate unless you got like a really good company culture and really good customer service. I can say for us, at least in Toronto, we have product-wise, we have some differentiators. We have the longest range options. Like, a lot of food delivery couriers use our bikes because our batteries are very long range, and we have very low warranty incidence rates. So the bikes are super durable, and people are not really spending a lot of money out of pocket on repairs. So those are a couple of things that kind of set us apart. And we're the top rated e-bike shop in Toronto. So we make sure we stay on top of that and keep every customer happy, because it's very easy to get kind of for customers to get pissed off sometimes if you don't give them what they want. But yeah, that's a little bit about us, a little spiel.
No, that's awesome. And I mean, believe me, here in 2024, customer service is a challenge. I mean, I experience in my everyday life, if I need something from somebody, it's like impossible to get a hold of somebody, or you get a bot or something like that. So I think as a differentiator in any industry, you know, if you can really nail it on customer service, I think it's a really easy way in 2024, unfortunately, to differentiate yourself, it seems. So, but that's amazing, man. I appreciate you sharing a little bit about your background. And when did you start this? When did you found this brand initially, by the way? I meant to ask earlier as well.
2021, about spring 2021. Yeah, that's when we started. It's been a bit of a rocky start. We had to wait for inventory for a long time in the beginning, you know, so we were sitting for months without inventory. That was a bit of a rough period in the beginning. But yeah, about three years ago.
Awesome. And then, so I guess when you started the brand, I mean, what was your general kind of go-to-market strategy? Assuming during COVID, you know, you were trying to gather some inventory, and like, are you like, if somebody buys from the website or buys from you, like, do you ship it direct to them? Do they come pick it up? Like, what is kind of the logistical side of it look like from that side point of view?
Honestly, like, when we started, we knew nothing. Like, I had no business experience. My partner didn't either, except like some student clubs, but that's not really, you know, the space. So we kind of took it like one day at a time, which I don't know if that's a good idea, to be honest, but I didn't have the wherewithal to think like, okay, well, how should we do this? Because I had no clue what the best way was. We did start online because we just had a website. We couldn't afford a warehouse or even like a storage unit. Right. We obviously had no shop. And my partner lived in a condo, and we used the condo's garage, the parking garage, to store some bikes. which we got in trouble for a few times. So once we placed an order for like our initial small batch of bikes, we tried to get some pre-orders. We had our website running, no ads. We used also to generate leads. That was always like the biggest question. How do we get leads, right? If we can't really afford Facebook ads or this kind of stuff, how do we do it? So we actually started with Facebook Marketplace. We started with that. It's free. And if you post a lot and it's like pretty well optimized, if you have like a bunch of listings, people are going to reply and they're going to be interested. So we got some initial traction through that. And because the e-bike space was kind of just skyrocketing at that point, we also got some traction through our website, like organically. We had some people interested and they purchased the bike through there as well. So that was kind of how we got the ball rolling before we even got the bikes at our doorstep. That's when we were just waiting for them to get to us.
Mm-hmm. And then when somebody does purchase, like, your fulfillment process is basically like, will you deliver it to them or do you have like a common space, like people will come pick them up and check it out? Or like, what did that kind of look like for the fulfillment side, I suppose?
Yeah, fulfillment, pretty straightforward. Some places in order, we ship it with one of our delivery partners, UPS, FedEx, or like a local Canadian company. And they'll receive it in about a week's time. And that's pretty much it. Now that we have this kind of hybrid model, we have stores now, two stores and some dealers.
Oh, awesome.
Then people can come in the store and pick it up, or they can pick it up from our warehouse. We have a warehouse in Toronto and we're going to open one here as well pretty soon.
Yeah, it's awesome. And obviously, you know, kind of higher ticket items like these, I would assume, you know, the sales cycle can be, you know, a little bit longer than something you typically buy like through e-commerce. You can kind of just buy on a whim. How do you kind of take to, you know, when people write in with questions or they're curious about, like, you know, how they can finance? Like, is that an option for people? How do you kind of deal with that, like customer service, not necessarily customer service, I guess more from like a sales perspective. How do you kind of deal with that? Is that something you're still doing kind of completely on your own? Do you have like a team around you now? Or I'm just curious. Yeah.
Yeah, we have a team now. You know, over time we kind of slowly built it up. We have a PPC for Google Ads, pay-per-click, like, just we have that. We have email, we have SEO, a person on our team. We have a couple more that help with, like, besides the employees in the store as well. So there's kind of a strategy, cohesive strategy, to try to get the person in the pipeline from awareness all the way down to purchase. And you're right, it does take longer. And there's so many touch points, which is, it's really hard to actually track or attribute the sale, because you don't know if someone comes into the store and they purchase a bike, you don't know if they saw it through an ad, if they got a referral through a friend, and that's really hard to track manually. So we're trying to figure out how to track things better, to be honest. But we kind of go off of benchmarks for ad spend and things like that. And based off of that, we know, okay, we're spending the right amount and this is how many leads we're generating. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's pretty difficult to really attribute a sale to a particular like ads channel unless it's super clear. Like, it's, I would say maybe a quarter of our sales we can attribute very accurately. The rest we're still trying to figure it out. But as long as the trend, you know, is growing, as long as we're growing, then we know, okay, we're doing something right.
Yeah, the most important metric, which is growth and revenue, of course.
Yeah.
I know it can be difficult with, you know, naturally, if you have like brick and mortar stores and people can actually come in and dealerships and things like those are kind of like, you know, you can't really track those things. Like, a lot of people that come on the podcast are like food and drink CPG brand owners. And, you know, one of the things that is like, it's great to get into like retail store shelves, but like you kind of lose all that data rather than when you sell, you know, direct to consumer with completely digital marketing, because that is all easily tracked. But when you kind of move off of the completely digital, I know some of those things can get lost in translation. But I think it's still, you know, I think you're still optimizing for, you know, the general just kind of marketing adage of like, it might take, whatever, depending on who you ask, so, you know, 8 to 10 touches to convert to a sale. I think existing in those like store shelves at dealerships and online and all these other avenues, I think, can just kind of bump those up over time. So I'm not surprised that you're seeing, you know, obviously growth with like, you know, so many channels to get eyes on. So that definitely makes sense. So yeah, I guess I'm just curious as well, like, you know, from what you can tell from the data that you do have, especially when you, you know, convert sales online, what kind of seems to be your like ideal customer or like target demographic for like who's actually buying these things? Is there like a specific age range, gender, profession, kind of geographic area? What do you kind of find in that regard from what you can tell from the data you do have?
Yeah, so good question. And I think every kind of brand, this has always been a question for us, like, where do we focus on? Because there are some, like, I would say general e-bike brands that kind of cater to everybody. Commuters, which are usually younger people, working professionals, older adults, which just use them for, you know, for fun or for exercise, you know, and like everything in between that. That's, you're kind of going from like 25 to up to like 60. Like, that's like pretty much everybody, right? And you also have food delivery, gig workers. So it's a really mixed bag. And for us, we kind of want the products to to speak for themselves and for the products to be appealing to the customer and to whoever they're going to be appealing to. Because e-bikes are, they're very universal. Anybody can use them, and it's just on your preferences and what you want. If you want a lighter e-bike for commutes, that's great for commuters, you know, or someone that lives in an apartment that doesn't need to like carry an 80-pound bike upstairs or up the elevator. If you're a food delivery worker, you need like something heavier with fat tires and a big battery, something durable that's going to last you a long time. So for us, it really is a mixed bag. I would say about half of our customers are in that commuter older adult range, you know, just people that want the e-bike for to go to work or just for leisure. And about the other 50%, which are mostly through our physical shop, are food delivery, food courier customers, because they live in like the downtown, the city center. And I know you've seen like in New York, there's so many of these guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's so many. It's same thing in Toronto, and they operate on word of mouth a lot. So if they see a shop, they come in also for repair and servicing. So yeah, I would say about 50-50 in that kind of range. And definitely more of our like online orders come from the commuter and the older adults. And these are the orders that we ship out to, you know, across the country and whatnot. So yeah, it's a bit of a mixed bag for sure.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. And part one question I always love to ask everybody that comes on the podcast, knowing everything you know now, all the experiences you've been through being in Toronto, moving to New York, if you could go back and give yourself any one piece of advice, if you were to start this business again, what do you think that piece of advice would be?
That's a good question. Piece of advice for myself. To be honest, I would say like not to worry so much. I know that might be super simple, but I'm the kind of person to be a bit paranoid or on the negative side of things, and that can waste so much time and take away from what you have to do. So if I had a way to just switch that up, which I got much better at it now, I would say like the fear and the worry, like that's really like it just kills momentum, it kills everything. Even if things are looking really dark to whoever, you know, watching this and they're just start a startup or they're working, you know, you need to turn that thing off, because even as you grow, it's not going to get easier. It's actually like the hardest part, like right now, like opening in a new country for us. It's the most challenging it's ever been. So I would say that. And why I'm saying that is because really the most I've learned in this business is like about myself, my own personality, and the character traits that I'm kind of lacking, the things that I'm good at, and the things that are like really, you know, everyone has their like negative traits, but when you go on a business path, those things get amplified times like 1,000%, and you get to see it firsthand. Like, oh, I didn't know I could react in such a negative way to something like this. So yeah, that fear and that worry thing, I would just tell myself to work on that more and to just shut it off, because I would have made a lot more progress had I not fixated on that so much.
You know, I think it's good advice, and you're probably not surprised to hear that it's actually a very common answer that I get to that question, whether somebody is, you know, been in business for 20 years or 2 months. It's a very, very common answer I get to that. And I think the general sentiment is, the point is really well taken, right? I think a lot of entrepreneurs get into business and they can be kind of perfectionists. You know, I think that's the reason you get into, you know, entrepreneurship in general, because you think you can deal with anything that comes, and like, you obviously can, you've gone through this much this far, but in doing so, you try to plan too much sometimes ahead of time. And it's like that old marketing adage of like, you know, if you're not embarrassed by the first thing that you bring to market, you probably did it too late. So I know, I think it's really good advice. And, you know, by the time, like, I've heard that like maybe like 40 to 50 times on the podcast, it's not really anecdotal evidence anymore. I think it's really like advice that people should take. If anybody listening is looking to, you know, get into their first entrepreneurial venture, that's actually one of the biggest things that I hear on the podcast. So I appreciate your perspective adding to that conversation, because I think it is really, really important. And Par, also just want to give you an opportunity quickly, just for anybody listening might be interested in, you know, checking out your products or maybe potentially getting in touch with you for potentially maybe like a business partnership or anything. What's the best way to stay in touch with you all and yourself personally?
I am on Twitter. I'm just trying to post on there. So that's how I got in touch with you guys, got in touch with me. So that was pretty sweet. I meet a lot of cool people on there. Mm-hmm. P. Drabi or Par, I think you can find me on there. That's pretty much the best way, to be honest. I try to post there as much as I can, just share the L's, share the wins, like everything, you know, as much as I can, because I see other people are doing it and you know, they're kind of just out there in the open. So I figured, you know, why not? I'll do that as well. And whoever wants to listen, great. You know, doesn't take anything away.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's definitely something I try to bring through the podcast as well, as getting like real accounts from real entrepreneurs that are just out there making it happen. Because you can get stuck in this trap, as I'm sure you know, just seeing things on social media, people like, I made $1 million last month in my first month in business. It's like, no, that's not true, man. Like, I know you took years to build this thing up. Now you're just like, you know, posting that for the clout. But so I'm trying to bring these like very real stories. So I really appreciate you being a part of this conversation and sharing your real story and background. And You know, the highs and lows that come with being an entrepreneur. I think that's the most important thing for anybody to come in with, is just that kind of nuance and perspective that, like, no, it's not going to be easy. No, you're not going to hit the lottery. Yes, it's going to take way longer than you think. But, you know, if you have the wherewithal to stick it out, like, there's really beautiful things at the end of that tunnel, even though, you know, there's struggles along the way. So I really appreciate your perspective on that. And I think it's one of the most important things, if anybody's listening that, you know, is a young entrepreneur or is looking to be an entrepreneur. So I think it's one of the most important things to understand. So.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, patience is the key. Like, everyone says that. Mm-hmm. Everyone says that, and you kind of don't really know what the end result will be until you just stick with it. Like, we had no clue we would, you know, sell our first batch of bikes, and then we had no clue we would be able to get a store, and then we didn't have like New York on a plan 3 years ago. Like, yeah, we're gonna go to New York. We didn't have that. Maybe some guys, they're like super laser focused and they have good experience and they can put something on the vision board from like day one, and then 3 years later they're there. Great, kudos to them. Like, I think those guys are super rare. But even if you don't have that kind of skill set or that kind of background, it's also fine. As long as you just get started and you just do something every day, give yourself time to rest, don't be so hard on yourself, eventually you'll find that, wow, you just made like nothing, something out of nothing, you know. And it's pretty amazing even for me to see it today, like, wow, this, we actually did this and we're still doing it, and you know, we're just gonna keep doing it till the wheels fall off.
I was gonna say no pun intended. No, but it's so true, right? And I think even like, you know, you speak about like that scenario where like you think about somebody is like, okay, like we start in Toronto and 3 years are going to be in New York. It's like, if that's your plan in the beginning, like the chances of the things that are out of your control leading to that actually happening, like it's just so like out of it's you have to get incredibly lucky for that plan to stick, starting something from the beginning. And I think you can actually kind of go wrong, like trying to fit in your master plan from day one into something where like it doesn't really make sense. Now it's 3 years down the line, just because you told yourself you wanted to be in New York. Maybe that doesn't make sense now at this point. And like you're trying to shoehorn that into your business plan because you just thought of it at the beginning. I think a lot of people can kind of fall into that trap too. So I think if anything, it's probably even better to just understand that, you know, it's like you plan, you get there, all hell breaks loose and you just keep going. Right. So, no, I really appreciate your perspective on all these things, Par. I think it's a really important conversation. And some of my favorite feedback I get from the podcast is, you know, people feeling like they're on an island as young entrepreneurs, not really feeling like anybody understands where they're at. So I appreciate you being a part of this community and coming on, man.
Yeah. Yeah. No, thanks for having me. I feel like I'm on like Joe Rogan or something. This is my first podcast. I listen to a lot of podcasts too. So it's really cool to be on one. So yeah, that's really sweet. I was like, oh, wow, podcast. Like, yeah, it's sweet. I'll go on. Why not? Thanks for having me on too. That's great.
Yeah, man. Your perspective is super valuable. I really appreciate you. I just want to wish you the best of luck and continued success in all you're doing, man. I love your passion for what you do. And yeah, man, just keep going. I really appreciate you being here, and I look forward to staying in touch as well. And yeah, we'll definitely add you on LinkedIn. I'm here in New York as well. So we'll definitely get together sometime as well.
Yeah, yeah. 95 Avenue B, East Village. I'll send you. We're not fully set up yet. That's where we're going to set up. About awesome. 2 weeks from now, it's going to be live. And yeah, man. Appreciate it, man.
I spent a lot of time right in Midtown, so won't be far from you.
Okay.
Awesome, man. I appreciate you, man. Thanks, Par. Thanks, everybody.
Take care. Bye.